Translation. Dear sir, you are Vedic knowledge personified and are directly Narayan himself. Kindly excuse us for the offenses we previously committed by criticizing you. Purport of Srila Prabhupada. The complete path of Bhakti Yoga is based upon the process of becoming humble and submissive. By the grace of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, all the Mayavadi sannyasis were very humble and submissive after hearing his explanation of Vedanta Sutra, and they begged to be pardoned for the offenses they had committed by criticizing the Lord for simply chanting and dancing and not taking part in the study of Vedanta Sutra. We are propagating the Krishna consciousness movement simply by following in the footsteps of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. We may not be very well versed in the Vedanta Sutra aphorisms and may not understand their meaning, but we follow in the footsteps of the Acharyas. And because of our strictly and obediently following the footsteps of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, it is to be understood that we know everything regarding Vedanta Sutra. Veda mai murti tumi shakshat narayan kshama aparada purbe jekai lo nindan. Dear sir, you are the Vedic knowledge personified and directly Narayan himself. Kindly excuse us for the offenses we previously committed by criticizing you. Sometimes it's better to just shut up and listen in life. I think we've all been in those situations and scenarios where maybe we've just gone a little bit too far. You know, I don't know if you... I go to a lot of meetings, and in my younger days you'd sometimes come out with a real blast of some enthusiastic, hypothesis about something. And everyone's just tolerating your presence. And then finally you get it, you know. You better just shut up and listen. You know, also as a child, isn't it? When it reached that point when you were in such trouble, maybe you just told... My father used to always say, "Stop lying, George. You tell one lie, you have to tell another lie to substantiate that lie. And it's more difficult to remember lies than it is to remember truth." So, when I reached that point, when I had exhausted all my means of trying to impress myself on another, then at such times the realization may come to us that it's better just to shut up and listen. I don't know if maybe your parents ever said that to you. In Scotland, it was quite a common thing. Just shut up and listen. Here at this point in Chaitanya Charitamrita, the Adi Lila. In the Adi Lila, Krishnas Kaviraj Goswami, he's introducing the text. And it's quite an introduction. I think sometimes when some people, they want to just read something about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. You say, "You should read Chaitanya Charitamrita." You start to read the introduction, you think, "How will I ever read this text?" Because the introduction is this whole theology of... He offers these in his Mangalacharan. You know, begins, I can't remember how many verses it is, 12, 13, something like that. The Mangalacharan of Chaitanya Charitamrita. He offers his respects, his honors, and his praise of everything that's meaningful. And also he sets us the right view with regards to what we're about to read, what we're about to hear perhaps. I'm sure over hundreds of years, very few people who would be sitting listening to Goswami speaking or reciting or... probably were illiterate and couldn't read. You know, reading and writing is not something that's... was always... When did the Gutenberg press was invented? You know, books weren't printed in great quantity. These books were just handwritten. So we'll be sitting listening to these books, for these texts. People would memorize them. They would recite them. People would listen. So I always hear in the Shastra, hear, 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 hear. A few places they'll say read. It's always hearing, hearing, hear it. Because that's how people were, you know, through their oral reception. So anyway, in the beginning of Chaitanya Charitamrita, in this Adi Lila, I think up to a few more, it goes beyond this, several more chapters and chapters, until finally it comes to the point of the Balya Lila of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The stories of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The transcendental pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Until that point, it's just this explanation of the Mangalacharan, the introductory prayers he offered. And the explanation of those verses can be very dense and challenging reading. Reading all the tattvas of the Guru, of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, of why he came, his mood is of his, the understanding of him is Radha Krishna, the sentiments of Radha, the truths about Nityananda Prabhu, the truths of Advaita Acharya Prabhu. These things, he speaks of these things elaborately. And it can be very dense reading. If you're, you really have to, you can't just skip through it. You catch nothing. You have to study that part. So sometimes the people reach attention to, yeah, maybe you want to start a little bit, you know, on a bit, get the flow going. And then we sit down with a pen and paper or with your notepad, iPad, iMac, netbook, whatever it is, and just take notes as you go through. Take notes as you go. Don't worry if we don't catch it all. As Prabhupada mentions here in the purport, that we may not be very well versed in Vedanta Sutra. I don't know how many people in here have read Vedanta Sutra. Never mind well versed. We may not have even read Vedanta Sutra. I had an attempt to read Vedanta Sutra on occasion. I found in Delhi a copy of Vedanta Sutra with the commentary of Baladeva Vidyabhushan. This is like this size. I thought, yes! This is it now. I never completed reading it. It was, again, extremely dense. I think for most of us devotees, we know a couple of lines of the Vedanta Sutra, isn't it? Which lines do we often quote from Vedanta Sutra? We give class. You have something in your mind? Atato Brahma Jigyasa, isn't it? You think, oh, this guy knows Vedanta Sutra. Another one. Very commonly spoken. Shastra Yonat Vat. They're all, everything will be understood through Shastra. You know, isn't it? Everything will be understood. They have a very preliminary experience of Vedanta Sutra. When Prabhupada was in Vrindavan, some of the, a local pundit was speaking to Prabhupada. Criticism of Prabhupada's disciples. He's saying, you know, your disciples, they're not very cultured people. They're not very cultured. They're not very learned. They don't know Sanskrit, the Bengali, all these things. Their behavior, their conduct, acha, is just, he was going on and on. Prabhupada was listening to him. And Prabhupada says, yes, it's true. It's true. He said, but, he said, there's one good thing about them. He said, they'll do anything I say. I mean, of all the qualities that someone must have, isn't it? In respect and in regard. Prabhupada says here, the very, quite a strong statement, the complete path of bhakti yoga is based on the process of becoming humble and submissive. That's quite daunting to me here, humble and submissive. Kind of goes very much against my nature as an individual, to be humble and submissive. You may try it, but still, it's like submission. Humble, okay. Submission. You know, that's challenging. It's a very conscientious level of it. The very quality is that Rupa Goswami in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, he says the dwar pravesh, the door to bhakti, the dwara, the door, pravesh, the opening that door to bhakti is based on the first three principles. Adau Guru Padashraya, Sri Krishna Diksha Shiksharam, Vishram Bina Guru Seva. These are all related to a level of submission of the self, humility and submission. Adau Guru Padashraya. Padashraya means to take shelter of the feet of someone. That may sound peculiar to... It's common language for us, isn't it? Take shelter of your lotus feet. When I first came to the temple, hearing things like, take shelter of someone's feet. I mean, why their feet? How do you take shelter of a person's feet? Prabhupada, in his translation of that, what's the song, Gaurangaya? Puloka Shriya. Gauranga Balite Hobby, Puloka Shriya. When he says about, or no, it's the other song, about following the footsteps of the six Goswamis, he said, studying the literatures, following the instructions, the guidance, being under the influence, being under the shade, being under the grace, being under the kripa of a Vaishnava, Padashraya, taking shelter. Like in the business world today, everybody has a mentor. Even in the temple, isn't it? You have to have a mentor. If you don't have a mentor, who will recommend you for initiation? It's a process not to control people. It's a process to empower people in their Krishna consciousness. Anyone who really wants to progress in a specific field really wants to learn it from somebody who's an expert. And in bhakti, we specifically want to learn it from someone who's not only an expert, but someone who's a connoisseur. They relish it. They have a certain level of engagement with bhakti, which is very impressive, enlivening to the heart. Adau Guru Padashraya. In the beginning, you have to take a teacher. You must accept a teacher. One may have Guru Padashraya, one may have many teachers, or one teacher. One in isolation, I was ranting on about this in a previous questions and answer session here. One in isolation may be problematic. Maybe not, but it's not recommended. Adau Guru Padashraya, Shiksha Gurus, Diksha Gurus, Shravan Gurus, wherever Krishna is coming, wherever Krishna cares to manifest, make his appearance, that's Guru. They say Bhaktisiddhanta of Saraswati was not in approval of Ek Guru Vad. He's simply listening to one person finished. You either the wrong person, you're in trouble. Isn't it? The wrong person, you're in trouble. So, with others, Guru Sadhu Shastra Bhakya Chiteti Koriya Aikya Arana Kori Hamani Asha. In the continuation of that song, this, we just sing the first verses. It used to always hang there in the corner. Every time they decorate the temple, it goes till somebody goes, where is that? The song words. Guru Sadhu Shastra Bhakya Chiteti Koriya Aikya Arana Koriya. This is, he says this further in the song, that the Guru, the Sadhu, the Shastra, these constitute authority. One is authoritative in the life of a devotee. Now when you have something like that, you may call it tripartite, so much the responsibility lies with the individual. There's at no point in this should somebody become a mindless, thoughtless individual. One listening to Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. And make up your mind. The onus is there on the individual. The in a situation where we have a checks and balances, it means, Prabhupada called it that, isn't it? The checks and balances. It means weigh it up. Weigh it up yourself. So that mediation of these three sources, Guru, Sadhu and Shastra, is very, very important. Unless one has knowledge of scripture, when Rupa Goswami speaks about what qualifies a person more and more and more and more, just for Vaidhi Bhakti, he speaks the Shastra Yukti Sunapano Didastra Dayandra, the highest eligibility for someone in the path of bhakti is that they have a profound knowledge of the books and the texts that are related to bhakti, the subject of bhakti. They know the subject of bhakti very well from the texts which speak about it. Shastra Yukti, not in a superficial way, but they know it very well. They know the subject well. Because in Vidhi Bhakti, the very nature of the devotion, Ragahina Janavaji Shastra Gyai, there's no rag, there's no sustained emotions, bhava, there's no bhava, there's no rag, there's no attachment. Shastra Gyai, it's completely based upon the prescriptions of the sacred texts. Shastra Gyai. Vaidhi Bhakti Valitari Sarva Shastra Gyai. This is what all the Shastras say. Even to give reference to Vaidhi Bhakti, to say that it's devotion based upon the prescriptions of the Shastras, even to just say that, Krishnadas Kaviraj is saying, all the Shastras say that. Vaidhi Bhakti Valitari Sarva Shastra Gyai. All the scriptures sing that, then Vaidhi Bhakti, a person has no rag, and they're following the prescriptions of Shastras. So, therefore, knowledge of the text is very important. How does one even know the qualities of the characteristics or what a guru should do? What constitutes a guru? Immediately when we talk about that subject, isn't it? All the verses start coming. Tasmad viginatam sa gurum sa eva gabachit samit pani srutriyam brahmanishtam tadvik and tasmad gurum prabhadyeta jigyasu shri uttama shabdi parichanishnatam. All of the characteristics of the guru are all based solidly and profoundly upon what's stated within scriptures. Everything that is said by the guru is also has authority when it is speaking on the basis and authority of the scriptures. If it goes outside of the parameters of that, then that's questionable, highly questionable. The authority of that comes with the title is lost. So, the Shastras of such profound importance, Shabda Pramanam, the highest, the very direct, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, isn't it, he said, Pramanera madhya shruti pramana pradhan shruti jai mukhyata kahi sai sai praman. Sai sai praman. You don't even need to understand the Bengali. You know what to say. Wow, wow, that's pramanam. Wow, wow. Sai sai praman. That's the means by which to measure a thing. Pramana means that. Literally, how you measure the thing. How will you measure the thing? How will it measure up? How will I understand it? Sai sai praman. Pramanera madhya shruti pramana pradhan. Of all forms of pramana, shruti pramanam, specifically meaning shabda pramanam. What's written here? For us, Srimad Bhagavata, Chaitanya Charitamrita, and all the theological texts of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's followers. This is shabda pramanam for us. Amongst all pramanas, shruti jai mukhyata, and the shruti, the scriptural texts, amongst, and in that mukhya artha, the primary meaning of the text, not the secondary meaning of the text. Not the, here's something simple. We're looking for what's the great significance behind all of what the person's saying. You know? What does it all mean behind, what's all behind it secondarily to what they're saying? This was Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's point. Mukhya artha. What the direct meaning, always in Sanskrit, the primary meanings of the word are chosen in priority where they are appropriate to the context. Where they're inappropriate to the context, a secondary meaning is chosen. Yesterday evening I was speaking on Upmopamyena Sarvatra Samampashri Yojana. A verse from Bhagavad Gita. That was about the yogis. The yogis attained a state where, you know, tranquility, equanimity, literally they were free of obsession of material life. Not yet perhaps perceiving some form of God. But it was upmopam yena sarvatra samam pashita yojana. What it was saying about them was that atma upam yena. There's two words in the one verse. When I was looking at the Sanskrit meaning of both the words, they meant the same thing. One was translated as comparatively, and the comparative, and the other was translated as equal. Samam was equal. Upamyena was comparative. When I looked up upamyena, the primary meaning of the word was the same. Sameness. It's about how in the seeing the a yogi, he feels like almost he has this pervading spirit, a great sense of unity with everything in the universe, complete connection. So sukham vayadi vadukam, in seeing the sukh, in seeing the dukh of other people, the yogi is empathizing very deeply with it, very very deeply empathizing with it all. Sukham vayadi vadukam. This is somebody very progressed. Very progressed. And so, it was saying, the samam, upamyena, were that, you know, he sees others as himself. Isn't it? Like the Christians coming, they say, love your neighbor as thyself. You know, the way you like to be treated, the way you don't like to be treated, don't treat people the way you don't like to be treated, is the point, isn't it? So yogi sees like that. When I read the first word, I thought, it's the same word. No, what I was thinking was, why did Prabhupada translate it as comparative and not equal? And then, because I was only reading the first line, I never read the second line, I thought, oh, because someone's there. And what's the use in Sanskrit to not repeat the same thing? They're not repeat two words of the same meaning. So therefore you go to a secondary meaning of the word. And it makes sense in that context. That's how the texts are approached. So mukhya artha means always the primary meaning of a thing is considered first in the context that it's given. If it's not fitting or there's some repetitive scenario there, the other meanings are looked for. So, with Shastra, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, this is Pramanera Madhya Shruti Pramana Pradhan. Pradhan, the strongest form of evidence for anything is the Shastra. More than anything else. Shruti Jai Mukhyata Kahi, not only that, the direct meaning of it. Not all secondary meaning, all that. Gona, Shankara, he Acharya, so he looked all, find his way through it all. Look to the secondary meanings of everything and build a philosophy on that. Know this mukhya artha. So the shabda, the shastra has tremendous authority. Tremendous authority. By the shastra we know who the guru is. If the guru is speaking according to shastra, they are authority. Same with the sadhus. The sadhus are what's described as the characteristics of sadhus, we see that in people, they are their sadhu. It's a tremendous formula. It's like a hermeneutical device. A means to knowing device. This is the device. And so, like, a very simple, I remember one time I was driving in the car with, remember Mark the driver? So I was driving the car with him, we were just going to someone's house. And Mark was following the satellite navigation system. And I was thinking that, you know, I was sitting, I was just saying, it's like the guru, the Shastra, it's like the Shastra, isn't it? All the Shastras there, based on all, the Shastras all the roots of everything. And then the guru is showing this route, specifically, the voice is saying, take a right, at the next roundabout, take the third exit, isn't it? And then that dreaded command, make a U-turn, make a U-turn. So, I was thinking, oh, he's the guru. Guru speaking from the Shastra to the disciple here. And then the person sitting in the back, we were going to their house. Then they said, no, no, don't go that way, go this way. And I thought, sadhu. Then a quick way. You know, sometimes when you're in Vrindavan, there's ways to go to all the temples. If you live there, then you know all the gullies. You can go quickly through the gully to Radha Govinda temple. So, we may be sitting here and the guru is giving instruction, you should go to Vrindavan, visit all the temples, etc., etc. It's like satellite navigation. Based upon its consistency with all the information that's within the navigation system, the Shastra, then we go there, we know that's the course to go. Then all the sadhus are there, here, take this gully, take that one, come on this way, this is a great one, I know the priest here. Come to the front, we'll get Mahaprasad for you. Like this, it all works together. But everything and the authenticity and respect is based on the Shastra. Not one human being in isolation. They can't be in isolation from Shastra, nor from sadhus. It is a tripartite. It's grounded and it's open. It's a phenomenal system. It's grounded. You know, if you don't have any one, like for instance, if you just listen to everybody, but the authority is lost in it all. Somebody who's the professor of the subject, isn't it? The GP, general practitioner. You say, okay, you have to go see the specialist. You go to hear the specialist, that's it. Once the specialist has spoken, fine. If you go to the internet after that, you're finished. I was having this conversation with my doctor recently about statins. She was saying, you know, you have to keep taking the statin. I was like, you know, I read so many things on the internet about statins, I don't know. She's like, it's endless. And I said, I know, it's like so many pundits, I'm completely confused. Then she said, just take it. And then that was when I just shut up and listened at that point. I thought, I can't, I'm not going to study medicine at 50, you know. That's their job. If they kill me, let it be. But I'm not going to, I need to study all these things. This is my priority. So I took it. On her authority. The internet's like having only Shiksha Gurus. And no Diksha Guru. It's endless. The Diksha Guru is the person who constitutes this balance, this grounding. It's grounded. But it's not blocked. You're not stuck there forever. That may sound a bit radical, a bit shocking. But sometimes in reality, somebody takes initiation after 1 year. After 10, they're more inspired by somebody else. They're just getting all their juice. They're getting so much attention, so much guidance, so much inspiration from someone else. It happens. In the Goswami's lives it happened, isn't it? Jiva Goswami was inspiring. Who was it? Shamananda. He came here, the Diksha Guru, everything. He came to Vrindavan. He met Jiva Goswami. He studied with him. He went beyond the rasa of his own guru, who was a Sakya Ras, and he was in Madhurya Ras. And he just had such love, affection for Jiva Goswami. He was his, isn't it? Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes, I offer more respect to my Shiksha Guru. So in life, it's a system which is grounded. But it's a system that's also open. And I think that's a phenomenal, sometimes the Guru Sadhu Shastra. There's a profoundness in this methodology of understanding, knowing and progressing in bhakti. So, one guru is very, Diksha Guru is important, Adau Guru Padashraya, Sri Krishna Diksha, there. And one should then, you know, commit. I've committed to learning from you now. I've committed. It's like signing into university. I'm committed to learning. I'm learning from this theological school. This is the person who is teaching me now, who's advanced in the subject. Diksha Shikshanam. And listen, study, learn. Bishram Bena Guru Seva. And this Bishram Bena, it means with heart, with complete heart. Not only conscientiously, but with a very deep affection. Guru Surida Saurida, isn't it? In the Bhagavatam it says, like my dearmost friend, very dear friend. The Guru is like it's a parental role, isn't it? It's like a parental role in devotional life. But also friendship, parental and friendship. My daughter said to me the other day there, she said, "Dad, you're a real friend, and that's what I need right now, not a dad." I thought, okay. Fine. The guru's a bit more of a serious relationship than that. And kids are a bit different from disciples. So anyway, the Bishram Bena, this is the Dwar Pravesh to Bhakti. This is the door. This is the doorway coming in to devotional life. I can't remember why I got into that whole thing, but it was related to this invocation, this Mangalacharan of Kaviraj Goswami. And here, that sometimes you have to shut up and just look. That was the point. To these sources of authority or evidence. Here, maybe quite the opposite of Prabhupada saying here. I have to say, maybe I should just say about humble and submissive. These are dangerous terms as well. These are of profound importance, but I would say they're also a profound danger. It's because humility and submission should not facilitate us being part of an abusive culture. So humility and submission, these qualities are called Sangha Siddhi Bhakti. These things are bhakti only and when they are related to what's called Swarup Siddhi Bhakti. The pure practice of devotion. When they serve the pure practice of devotion, they have relevance. These things cannot be accepted outside of understanding what is our prayojan. We have to be reminded every day of our prayojan. That's why every day when I come to the temple, he's there in the shoe room cleaning the shelves. And I think, prayojan. Every time I see him, never forget prayojan. Never forget the prayojan. And all we do, everything must relate to what we seek to achieve. Then everything has relevance. Everything's reconciled in that. Everything must relate to what we seek to achieve, the prayojan. So submission and humility, these have relevance when they are related to and assisting us achieve the prayojan, bhava bhakti. In isolation from that, and separate from that, they have little value. So therefore it's called Sangha Siddhi Bhakti. The Swarup Siddhi Bhakti, Bhaktivinoda Thakur speaks about these in a text called Bhakti Tattva Vivek. Swarup Siddhi Bhakti, Sangha Siddhi Bhakti, Anarop Siddhi Bhakti. Swarup Siddhi Bhakti means Shravanam, Kirtanam, Smaranam. All of these, the angas, the main angas of bhakti. Sangha Siddhi Bhakti means the qualities. You know, being humble does not mean I'm going to, in and of itself, means nothing, really. It just means I'm giving into the will of everyone else. Submission in and of itself just means I'm giving into the will of everyone else. And sometimes that's not a good idea. At a certain point, I wasn't any longer submissive to some of the guidance I was receiving from some people who really loved me. I thought, no, I'm not going to eat any more of that stuff. That's, some animal was killed for that. I'm not going to eat that anymore. No, I don't want to work in this job anymore. I want to go. I was completely unsubmissive. Sometimes being completely unsubmissive is extremely important. Everything's contextual. Every quality, every characteristic is, nothing's without context. It's not like submission is this absolute reality beyond everything and outside of everything that we should be. It's only within the context of bhakti and progression towards the prayojan and being submissive to everything in that culture, tvadiya, tvadiya nam samarchanam. Everything that's favorable to my progression, I'm submissive to, isn't it? Therefore, daimya. Danya Atma Nibedana Goptripti Bharana Avasya Rakibi Krishna Vishwasa Falana. This Bhakti Anakula Matra Kajira Srikar Bhakti Pratikula Bhava Bhajana Giha Sadanga Sarana Gati Hoibi Jaha Tahara Patana Suni Sri Nandakumar. Bhaktivinoda Thakur sings that. When a person prays and they have these things in their life, then Krishna Kumar will hear it. Tahara Pratana Suni. That person's prayer, Suni, he hears it. Nanda Kumar. He hears it. Sadanga Sharanagati. The first principle, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, you see in his listing of, he put Dainya in the first. Dainya means the same as the Sanatan Goswami writes, Atmanikshepa. No. Oh yeah, Atmanikshepa, Karpanya. Karpanya. The literal meanings of these words is like, lowly, miserly. Isn't it? Karpanna dosha. Why are you such a miser in your thinking? Krishna says to Arjuna, Karpanna. So this and Dainya, literally translated as humility. This is a very important within the devotional culture, extremely important. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, isn't it? Look, when Shukadev Goswami came to Navadvip, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu chose him to teach a very, very profound lesson in the importance of being humility and the purpose itself. Vallabhacharya, the great Acharya of Pushti Marg. I mean, he was Shukadev Goswami. He came in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Leela as Vallabhata, a great scholar, a phenomenal scholar. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu first met him in Ailagram, where he stayed near Prayag, across the Ganga. That's that you remember, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu got on the boat. Vallabhi invited him to his home, come and take Prashad, let me honor you. He knew he was a Vaishnava. He knew he was a Bhakta. He said, come on. He got in the boat. They were crossing Yamuna. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saw the black color of the river Yamuna, the blackishness. And he just thought of Shamsunda. And as soon as he thought of Shamsunda, then when somebody has profound feelings, you know when you're in love with someone, I'm sure everybody here is older now. Most people know it. When you're in love with someone, when you think of them, you feel things. And those feelings, they have what's called anubhavas, which means the external symptoms in your body. You feel, isn't it? Oh, Krishna. I watched something on YouTube the other day. There was this choir in Johannesburg. They were singing a song to Nelson Mandela. They were just, and it was Woolworths. They were all dressed as Woolworths assistants. And then they began to sing in the store. And all the people were like, wow. And they were just singing in their language, whatever it was. It was about the time he was imprisoned for so many years. How many years was he in prison? 27 years. And they were saying, where's Nelson? Where's Mandela? Where is he? They were saying, what is it? Buana, where is he? Where is he? Where is he? Like that. I was watching it. I was feeling the ecstatic symptoms. I was feeling my ear was, I was just feeling like, I had a lump in my throat. I felt goose pimples in my body, like, you know. I just felt, this song provoked such feeling. It's like, you know, I wish when I say, Kaha Rupa Sana, where is Krishna, where's in that verse of separation from the Vaishnavas? Or, you know, Hey Radhe Brajadevike, you know, this, where is Radha? If it's conjured up by people with, that's why it's important to be with connoisseurs of bhakti, because when they sing and when they pray, I never met Nelson Mandela in my life. I learned very little of him. But the people who loved him dearly, people who were his people, when they sang, I felt her revelations in my body. So I think when meeting an advanced, somebody who's in love with Krishna, I think also, why should they not have the same effect on us? Not that we're just endlessly trying to figure them. Is there something behind this person? They should have the same effect on us, surely. So, the Vallabha Acharya, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu felt these anubhavas to such a profound level because he was thinking of his beloved, that they just reached such a height, he fell in the water, he fell off the boat, right into the Jamuna. Vallabha was like, what's going on? He was like, they're pulling Chaitanya, well, you can imagine the scene, they're pulling him back into the boat. What's that? It's like an insane situation. Unmada, Divyan Mada. So you become like a crazy human being. You imagine being in a, somebody falling in the water. They're uncaught. What's going on? And so anyway, they got to his house. They sorted the whole thing out. He hosted them. He worshipped them. He did all the things. And then they were going back. He said, let's go by the Ganga. He didn't want to take, you know, the risk again. They go in the Ganga. All the rivers come there together. It's a Triveni Sangam. Let's go in the Ganga this time. So anyway, some years later, he came to Navadvip. And this time he came to Navadvip, he'd written a commentary on the Bhagavad. And he came straight to Mahaprabhu, and he was very respectful and everything to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his associates. He wanted to spend some time. And right from that moment, from his first conversation with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did this thing. He was glorifying Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu just said, no, I took sannyas in the Bharti line. I took light from these Shankara followers. I don't know all these things. Oh, he said, you know, maybe you can, he said, I've written explanations of the names of Krishna. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, I don't know all these names. I only know Shamsundar and Yashoda Nandan. And I don't know, and all I know is they mean is that he's black. You know, he's black like a tamal tree. And he's the son of Yasoda. I don't know anything more than that. And because I'm not clever in that way, my Gurudev just told me, you just chant. You're not so clever. You just chant and dance. That'll be good for you. And then he said, but you should meet with Nityananda Prabhu. He is just going all over Bengal and so many people are coming to Krishna Bhakti. He said, you meet with Advaita Acharya. Those people who are categorized as chandalas by medieval society, they're all bhaktas. He's teaching them all bhakti. They're all complete bhaktas. You should meet Ramananda Rai. Everything I know is from Ramananda Rai. Whatever I know, he taught me. And you know, with regard to the holy name, you speak to Haridas Thakur. Now, can you imagine in that medieval culture? He was a pundit. He was Brahmin. He said, whatever I know about the holy name, I learned it from a Muslim. Not even a Muslim. He's a rejected Muslim. Not only is he a rejected Muslim, he's a rejected Hindu. Haridas's predicament was such The Muslims tried to kill him and the Hindus were against him. The Orthodoxies, the Brahmin, they were, what's this? Chi, chi, chi. Isn't it? They were. He was rejected. He said, yo, you learn, I learned from him everything about the Holy Name. He named all his associates. And he said to Balabhacharya, you learn from them. If you want to talk, talk to them. I'm not very clever. He's the omniscient supreme personality of Godhead. Why is he speaking like that? What was the prayojan in his speech? Did he mean it? Or what was the principle of it? He was speaking from humility because the person that would come to speak to him was, it said that he saw with Bhatta, Bhatta Rida Drida, in the heart of Vala Bhatta was this Abhiman Kori. This is pride. The pride was in his heart about his scholasticism. Seeing that, Bhunga, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu thought, I'll break this. This is a great mercy. Therefore, Kaha, he spoke like that. So, you know, from then, Vallabha was a bit embarrassed by the whole situation. He was feeling a bit stressed out. And he really wanted to, recover himself. So he thought, I gotta find somebody in Jagannath Puri who'll hear my commentary in Bhagavatam. It took so long, and so he went. They're all like, but people knew Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wouldn't hear it. Nobody would hear it. Everywhere he went, I'm busy. I'll have to do the midday arti. Well, can I explain something? No, I have to go in the chanting party. Again, really, everybody was going in different directions. And then finally, he cornered Gadadhar Pandit. And Gadadhar's nature, isn't it? It's like Rukmini. He's very, compliant, very loving, very soft in his nature. Like that. Therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would tease him so much. He would tease him so much. So Vallabh sat, he told Gadadhar, you must hear my commentary and my explanations. And Gadadhar was thinking, no, please, no, don't. Inside. He was being, outside he was being respectful. He was being very respectful externally. He was thinking, the whole Jagannath Puri doesn't want to hear his commentary. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he'll chastise me so much. I can't hear it. And I can't say he's senior to me. Why, he was in a predicament. His ears began to close up from inside. Sometimes we find in our life, we find ourselves in that predicament. Especially when we're maybe associating with a senior devotee and we hear them talking about their god brother or something like that. In a way we think, it's better, that's for them, it's not for, that's on that level of matters. Why I should destroy my spiritual life by assuming a privilege to speak in that way about those who are more senior to me. So they'll just think, yes, we don't want to say, why are you, is that not apparat? They just close up from inside, isn't it? You're thinking, I don't want to hear this. I don't. So, anyway, it's Gadadhar. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu stopped talking to Gadadhar. He was devastated. He was like, this is too much. My world's falling apart. And then in assemblies, then he's there, Balabhatta, he's saying, he's asking Swip Damodar and everyone, why are you? You all treat Krishna like he's your paramour. When you're in that love, that mood, that relationship with Krishna as a supreme male, then why do you call him by his name? Because any chaste wife would never use the name of her husband. That was back in ancient times. Don't get any ideas. In marriage, it begins a pati. Then it changes. Then it finally becomes you. Then you empty the bin. It's like that. Maybe not in all cases. Only 99%. I'm only joking. It's a point of humor. I just remembered. The speakers advised that classes are broadcast live. My wife may be listening. So, he said, "Aye, you called by the name." They all sat and they said, "Well, Mahaprabhu was sitting in our company. Perhaps you just ask him your question." And Mahaprabhu said, "What? What's more important than what you call the husband is what the husband orders you. Is that not according to the Dharma, Shastra and all these things? That, you know, if you call the husband..." I'm not saying anything about what the cultural standard should be today. It's just the point, the message here. He says that more than the name of the... getting the name right, the instruction's more important. The order's more important. That's what's so important in the relationship. And if the husband says, "Say my name," then you better say it. So therefore we Krishna Krishna Hari Hari Ram Ram, we say the names. He was a bit dented by that. It went on like this until finally on the day he said to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in a desperate measure, "Well, will you hear my commentary on Bhagavatam? Because I've even found faults in the commentary of Srila Sridhar Swami." There he went beyond. Even the gentlest person has a point where this is not beneficial. This is not for you, for me, for the situation. Sorry. Sometimes you find the softest people, when they hit that moment, they hit it big time. You know, they never get angry, never like that. Finally, you push them over the edge. You've never seen some... Wow! So anyway, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "Anybody who criticizes the Swami is a Vaishya." He just said the word. He meant prostitute in the language. "No. I'm sorry. He is the commentator. Everybody follows his commentary. Anybody who goes outside of his commentary is a complete nonsense. He's only get out from here." It's literally like that exchange. At that moment, and receiving the kripa of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, his heart sank so low. It was like that moment, the point of no return, where you think, "I should really just shut up and listen." And he just thought, Chaitanya Dev is Parameshwar, right before me. And I have been unable to see this before me because of my pride, because of thinking myself more than others. Everything was focused on me. What does submission mean? It means compromising my will and giving preference to the will of another. Submitting to a situation or to a person. Their will is prevailing. Where the will is Krishna, where the will is Krishna Seva, Krishna Bhakti, where the will is love of Krishna, I need to submit to those things, and I need to be affected and inspired by those. I'm opening myself to influence. So where the Yamuna is flowing, the Yamuna of all things favorable to Krishna Bhakti, Bhakti Anukula Matra Gajara Sviha, I want to be in the flow of it completely. I want to be influenced entirely. I want this to penetrate my mind. I want it to lift my heart. I want to be empowered by it. Submission is about self-empowerment. It's not about masochism. It's not masochism It's not like humility and submission. I should whip myself. Because in whipping myself and feeling terrible about myself, I feel some level of personal satisfaction. Submission and humility, purposeless humility and submission, it doesn't mean anything. It has to be purposeful. And the purposefulness of it is bhakti anukul, completely. Where it's not bhakti anukul, it's pratikul. I'm sorry, I shut my ears. I mean, I wasn't very submissive of Gadadhar to shut his ears. You think of Prabhupada, was Prabhupada a very submissive person? He was, extremely, and he wasn't extremely. He got on with what his plans were in his presentation of Krishna consciousness. And he spoke it as he understood it. He didn't comply, he didn't compromise, he didn't. I'm sure there was levels of, as he was managing things over years. But it's like, somebody may be tremendously submissive and also not submissive. Extremely humble and not humble at all. It all depends what purpose it serves, what context it exists within. So humility and submission, giving into the will of Krishna, that's the bottom line. So the path of bhakti is based upon the becoming humble and submissive. Completely submissive to the will of Krishna. And if one's not humble, we're going to miss it. We're not going to be, we won't be influenced by it. We'll miss it completely. We'll be in the finest company and we'll miss every word of it. Look at Narad Rishi. When the sadhus came when he was a boy, he just served them humbly, submissively, and he even ate the remnants of their food. And they blessed him. It was the right situation, it was the right scenario. But a lot of humble and submissive people in life are people who have been tremendously abused by cultures and other people. So though it's a culture for progress, when it serves the journey of love, love profound, then it has relevance, then it has meaning in bhakti marg. Not when it is compliance with all that's harmful. Then we can be done with it completely. So here, Prakashananda and his followers, they reached a point. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was extremely humble with them. He wasn't arrogant. He wasn't the devotees. They were so broken-hearted about the criticisms these people had made of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He accepted an invitation where all these people would be. And when he got there, what did he do? He sat with all the shoes were. But he was so radiant. Everybody was like, wow. Look at the beauty of this person, this human being. And then when they asked him, he spoke with tremendous humility. And he just blew their minds. And they became silent. They became submissive. They became humble and submissive. And because of that, they were open to the flow. And they all became Krishna conscious. So I think that in reading and studying the life and teaching of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and specific in this place here, he was also very forgiving. He just forgave them like that. He was very forgiving. I think we can learn that also. Forgiving. Even people who are talking about us. We all have a few or many of those around us in life sometimes. We're just forgiving. Being forgiving. Not taking it on as a burden on our shoulders. And then the humility, you know, when we've got it wrong, being able to say, look, I'm sorry about that. Like they did. Prabhupada translated, dear sir. That was so polite. Dear sir. And requesting to be excused and remembering that being humble and submissive is very, very important quality. I would say in pretty much many ventures of life. But it has to be in where it's serving the purpose of Krishna consciousness, where it's serving the mission of Krishna consciousness, and the prayojan of Krishna consciousness is which to love Krishna, to attain bhava. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.